I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Carol Norton and Stephanie Sample. They are with Wild Earth Guardians. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thanks.
Now, we haven't had you on for a while, and there's an awful lot to catch up on. We're going to talk about wolves and all kinds of things, but I also wanted to give everybody the lovely news that it's your 25th anniversary. You've been at this quite a while.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. So we're celebrating 25 years. We'll be celebrating all year long, and lots of events look forward to, and some of the things that we're proudest of are we've halted logging on more than 21 million acres of national forests and ushered in a new era of endangered species protection. So we're looking forward to another great 25 years.
So we have talked on this show many times about wolves and the importance of wolves in ecosystems, and wolves at a certain point were listed as what? Endangered species? Threatened species?
You know, the most recently they've been listed as endangered, and that's been the case for a couple of decades. And it's what led to the reintroduction of wolves into Yellowstone National Park, which by all accounts has been one of the most successful conservation efforts ever. Wolves were reintroduced. The ecosystem benefited in a variety of ways, and the wolves were able to become more, they grew and did their thing, and there's more of them, and it's better and better each year.
Now, why were wolves endangered in the first place? They're certainly a very adaptive and strong species.
You know, they are, but remember that they have a very strong social structure, and when you disturb the social structure, you actually disturb the whole pack and eventually the whole population. So it wasn't that hard for Americans as they came west and began to do things like farm and ranch to kill them off. And that, in fact, basically happened. The wolves, both the gray wolf in the northern Rockies and the Mexican wolf in the Gila and Arizona, were killed.
And so they were basically killed off by farmers and ranchers who felt that the wolves endangered their livelihood?
And interestingly, our government as well. So farmers and ranchers and other resource managers, that's with quotes, they asked the government to help them in this process, and the government stepped up and did exactly that.
Now, there is not only a kind of a reality of what wolves might do to livestock, but there's also a lot of mythology about wolves and a lot of just fear of wolves that comes from, what does it come from? I mean, Europe, it's in fairy tales that go back centuries.
I actually think it's uniquely American. As it turns out, countries like Italy and France are doing everything they can to support the wolf populations.
Yeah, but
there,
they exterminated wolves in northern Europe.
Sure, but and it's a process of bringing them back. But in the United States, I think predators, carnivores, really took on a symbolic meaning for people who were having a hard time during a period of our manifest destiny, a period where we were expanding into new areas where it was wild and scary. And the carnivores, regardless of whether they actually were killing children, you know, cows, sheep, they represented the wildness that people were up against.
And that wildness for a frontier person, I sort of try to put myself in their position, must have been really scary at one point in history.
You gotta believe it, right? I mean, they were working their tails off.
Yeah.
What we forget is that wolves and other carnivores are also working very hard to survive, and with a little empathy, it doesn't seem like we can't all do it together.
So let's talk for a moment about what actually happened in Yellowstone. Wolves were brought back, and it's one of those great examples, and I love hearing these stories because they're examples about how one member of an ecosystem affects the whole ecosystem.
It's so true. Scientists would call it a trophic cascade, but what it means is that you reintroduce wolves, and wolves chase and hunt elk, and elk stop hanging out in river valleys eating all the aspens, so the trees grow back and create shade, and the shade cools the water, and the water then can support fish and trout, which are very sensitive to temperature, and they also then the insects and the rest of the sort of supporting ecosystem can all come back as well. And all of a sudden you have a much more fully functioning ecosystem that, oh, by the way, is much higher, much more resilient to climate change.
Very interesting. And so this is the kind of thing. You reintroduce wolves and you get more trout.
Great, isn't it? You just got to love that circle, that web.
And so many more pieces to the whole thing. Now, how long has this been going on, for example, in Yellowstone? When were wolves reintroduced?
You know, that's a good question. I don't remember the year, but it's well over a decade now.
Okay.
So they were reintroduced here in the Mexican wolf was reintroduced here in the Gila in 14 years ago, I believe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what kind of changes, if any, have we seen in the Gila since wolves have been reintroduced there?
You know, unfortunately, in the Gila, you don't have the same success. And there's a variety of reasons for that. But mostly it's because there is the Gila wilderness itself, which is untracked by cattle, all of the surrounding area and much of the reintroduction area does have is ranched. And the number one conflict between preventing wolves from doing as well as they could in the Gila is the sort of the wolf-cow conflict.
Meaning what?
Meaning that ranchers believe wolves will depredate their cattle or sheep.
And is that true?
It can be true. If you look at statistics, weather is much more dangerous. Sickness is much more dangerous to the cattle. The wolves are probably doing some, and there's programs to reimburse the ranchers when that happens.
But meanwhile, they are so anti-wolf that what happens? They're killing wolves themselves, or?
You know, it's hard to tell. There aren't a lot of facts about what's happening, but certainly wolves are being assassinated. So last summer, it was the summer before actually, at least one of many of the alpha pairs was shot. So a reintroduction is considered successful if there are mating pairs. And with wolves in a pack structure, it's just one alpha pair that mates, a breeding pair, and then that all the numbers grow. So you want X number of breeding pairs and you want X number of wolves in the wild in order for consider the program successful.
I think one of the issues here that is really important to talk about is the whole question of public and private land. So this reintroduction is happening on public land, and yet people who are ranching there have leases to ranch on public land, but it is for their own gain and profit and so on. And it creates a whole set of questions about whose interest trumps whose.
It does, and given our history, it's not surprising that ranchers have an upper hand right now. They have a strong political voice, and the system is set up to support ranching and basically manifest destiny, you know, traditionally throughout the West. Now, what's interesting is that in the Gila, the ranchers are actually having a tough time. There is less grass, I would say, because of climate change. It's more difficult to ranch. It's a very rugged area to ranch in. It's hard work. Their kids are growing older and don't want to live 8 hours from the nearest airport. They want to be someplace where they can get an internet connection. So they're moving on. And many of the ranchers are getting older. And it actually has brought us to a place where we think there's an opportunity and an opportunity to use the market. So Guardians does not believe that we're going to convince a rancher that a wolf is good. They don't believe that. They have not believed that for generations. It's part of their culture. And I don't think it's really up to us to say your culture is bad and wrong. It's their culture. That's what they believe. And so what we can do is go down and take advantage of the market opportunity.
Which is?
That ranchers are between a rock and a hard place. It is difficult and expensive to ranch in the Gila. And they want to retire. And all of their equity is in their lease. So what Wild Earth Guardians has been working on for the last 15 years is working with the Forest Service and working with ranchers to buy out public leases.
And have you been successful in that?
We are, yes. We haven't actually bought a lease yet. It has been a long process, as you can imagine, because there's lots of moving pieces. First, you have to find a rancher who's willing to go public, that he's willing to work with Wild Earth Guardians. That's happened. So we are working with ranchers who would like to work with us. We'll have us buy out their lease. Then you need the Forest Service to agree to take the lease back and not put it back out to bid. So it doesn't work for us to buy the lease and have the Forest Service take it back and just give it to another rancher or lease it to another rancher. We want to retire that. And we want to retire it for as long as possible. So you can retire it for 10 years. You can retire it for 20 years. So you have to negotiate that whole process. And then if possible, you also want the entire federal government to support buyout as well. So we can do it administratively, but until it's actually legislated through Congress that it's legal and supported, it is not. It doesn't give us all the assurances that we would like, because we're going to raise $10 million to make this happen.
Right. Very interesting. We're talking to Carol Norton of Wild Earth Guardians about wolves. And, I mean, it's sometimes I see animals in the wild and I think, they don't know how much of their fate is determined by pieces of paper in offices. And when you think about, I mean, wolves listed as an endangered species, now an attempt to delist them. What's going on?
You know, what's happened is there's actually a couple things going on, but what's happened is that the wolves have recovered in 5% of their range in the Northern Rockies specifically. And as that's happened, they've moved into areas where they threaten existing interests, primarily ranchers. And ranchers have reacted by wanting to get rid of them and primarily to hunt them. In order to hunt you can't hunt an endangered species. You have to delist it. So the federal government has promulgated a rule delisting wolves.
Because of pressure of ranchers in the Northern Rockies?
Ranchers, politicians, a variety of interests. Our own government, as a matter of fact. So there's a piece of our government called in the Department of Agriculture that actually kills wolves.
Really?
Yes. Yes. And spends millions of dollars killing not just wolves, but many, many species.
What's the branch of government called?
It's called Wildlife Services. It used to be called Animal Damage Control.
Oh, my goodness. Wildlife Services, ladies and gentlemen. That's a euphemism.
Thank you. So it's not surprising that this rule was promulgated. Sort of the good news, interesting thing, is that Sally Jewell said she's the Department of Interior, and it's the Department of Interior that put this rule out, said that the decision will be based on the science. As well as what the people want. So the Department of Interior went out into the community. They held hearings all across the West in places like Denver. Albuquerque had one. There was one in Sacramento. There was one in Washington, D.C. There was one in a very rural part of Arizona called Pinedale. People spoke. At every hearing, the majority said they were in favor of leaving wolves as listed. Over 1 million comments were sent in. So written comments were sent in supporting keeping wolves listed as endangered. When that happened, the government took all those comments and began to deliberate. At the same time, they had, even before the hearings, they had put together a panel with scientists to determine what the science was. The science, there was quite a few issues with that. There were some very non-scientific biased scientists on the panel. Environmentalists in the community did manage to get a group of scientists that we believe would be unbiased and be able to do a fair, peer-reviewed report. That came out just maybe 10 days ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. And the science clearly says wolves should not be delisted. So the government is in an interesting place. They want to delist. The politics are that they are pushing them to delist. Obviously, the enviros conservationists in the country and many others are asking that they not delist. They've gone out for additional comments. They have this peer-reviewed science-based report saying the science does not support it. and it's just going to be interesting to see what happens.
So a decision hasn't been made yet?
No, decision has not been made.
If the decision is made to delist wolves, is there recourse?
There is.
And challenge, whatever?
The good news is at this point there is so much in the record that will allow groups like Guardians to take them to court. I mean, Sally Jewell said that the ESA works off science. The science says they shouldn't
ESA,
be delisted.
ESA, Endangered Species Act.
Thank you. The science says that they shouldn't be delisted. We believe we have an excellent case if they do.
So this is all a federal issue, or do states play a role as well in this whole question of wolves and endangered species?
You know, it's a federal issue, but states absolutely play a role. States can list their own endangered species, which is interesting. In New Mexico, you have a game department that was participating in the reintroduction in southern New Mexico, then decided they didn't want to participate, now has decided that they do want to participate. It's questionable whether it's not questionable. They do not support the reintroduction. That whether they're able to prevent it from happening. It's a federal program. It is happening. Is yet to be determined.
When we talk about the reintroduction of wolves into the Gila, what ecological benefits do you hope to see in the long run?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think for Guardians, it's two things. We believe that every species has a right to survive and thrive. And wolves have been part of this landscape for millennia. They are a key species that created the environment, that created the ecosystem as we find it. So first, we just believe that they belong. Wolves belong. We need them. They need us. The West needs them. They need the West. So at that level, it's simply knowing that wolves exist is important to us. At the scientifically, wolves, it's hard to tell yet, I think, what impact wolves will have in the ecosystem. I mean, clearly they're chasing the elk around. That's good. That allows trees to grow. Interestingly, probably a decade ago, maybe even two decades, because we've been at this for 25 years now, Guardians won a number of cases in the Gila ensured the Forest Service protected a lot of the riparian areas, fenced them off. And so,
riparian being over pertaining to rivers.
Over pertaining to rivers, that is correct. And so the riparian areas in parts of the Gila are in good shape, which is important and helpful, and the elk haven't been able to degrade. Now, on other places, the cows have absolutely been able to. So it's probably as much about getting the cows off the land as it is putting wolves back on the land.
Very complicated. Now, as you have mentioned, the public really has a large role to play in all of this. And sometimes, you know, you fill out some little comment sheet online and you really wonder if it's going to be heard. Are comments really heard and listened to when they come in large numbers?
I had a really visceral experience of this with this particular campaign because I was skeptical. Although I do comments, certainly we ask our members to do comments. We believe that comments are participating in the comment process is incredibly important. And going to these hearings was wonderful. It really felt like our government it was listening, that there was a process for us to participate, and that a million people sent in comments is incredibly heartening and encouraging and makes me feel like democracy actually works.
We're talking to Carol Norton of Wild Earth Guardians. So where does all of this stand now? I mean, we're waiting for a decision from the Secretary of the Interior. That'll be interesting. That covers the Northern Rocky Mountain area?
Both, actually. The Northern Rockies and the Mexican wolves down in southern New Mexico and Arizona, what we call the Gila bioregion. So comment period is open again. It'll be open till March 27th. So if you're interested in sending in your comments, now is your time. And as I said, I think it actually works. So do it. And
how do they find where to go for comments? Go to your website, wildearthguardians.org?
You know, if you go to wildearthguardians.org and there is a page called Stand for Wolves, all of the information is there.
Okay, great.
Because we're howling mad, as we like to say. So you can certainly, so submit your comments on the proposed rule to delist in the Northern Rockies. And interestingly enough, uplist the Mexican wolf. So the Mexican wolf is endangered, but it's a certain kind of endangered that allows bad things to happen to it. So it doesn't have all the protections that a endangered species normally would. It's called a 10J.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, federal government at its best, isn't it?
It really is true. You know, a wolf doesn't know that it's a 10J.
It does not. And you got to feel for these animals. I mean, they are working so hard, and we are writing rules with things like 10J in them that mean nothing to
them. So if they don't have, if it has some other number and letter, then they're more protected. And if it has a different number and letter, they're less protected.
Essentially, yes. So
we want them to be more protected.
We do. So we want them to be listed as a subspecies. There's some problems with the rule as it's proposed, but it probably overall would be good for the Mexican wolf. It's been a really long haul down there, and it needs to get better soon.
So Wild Earth Guardians is doing lots of things. Wolves is one of the important campaigns, but you also, there are a lot of other animals that are part of your activities and what you're doing, including prairie dogs and beavers and all kinds of things.
Beavers has been amazing. So we believe that these engineers of the ecosystem will allow us to mitigate climate change at an ecosystem level, at a state level, at a west-wide level. So when you have beavers in the ecosystem, they're building dams, they're holding water, water is soaking in, and you have a lot more resilience for the plants, animals, and trees that depend on that particular place. So we see beavers as being incredibly important over the course of the next couple of decades. We're happy to say the Forest Service also sees that as true, and the state also, New Mexico, sees that as true. And so our memorial was introduced into the state legislature to support the reintroduction of beavers around the state.
Did it pass?
It's still sort of in process. It made it through committee, though. So that's exciting, and we will be working on that with the state over the course of the next year or two, and have been for the last couple of years.
And so beavers are engineers that help mitigate climate change. I guess otters are too.
I love otters. It's funny because in the enviro world, different organizations like Wild Earth Guardians take the lead on different species. So we've taken the lead on beaver in the state. We've taken the lead on, along with other organizations, on wolves. We've taken a lead on, you know, one or two of the prairie dog species. Unfortunately, we're not a lead on the otter, which I would love to work more on otters.
Otters are extraordinary. I encourage everybody to go to YouTube and put otter in the search box and look at them. They're like those Olympians who do the kind of snowboarding. They're just incredibly agile.
Sleek and beautiful.
Yeah.
And their fur is amazing. And they're so expressive.
Now, what about prairie dogs? We haven't talked about those for a while.
We haven't. And prairie dogs are, you can pretty much assume prairie dogs are always under the gun. We have...
Literally and figuratively.
Exactly. And that's across the West. We've had some great... we had a great campaign up in Telluride. Telluride implemented last year the first non-lethal prairie dog mitigation rule. So if they do have an issue with prairie dogs, they don't kill them. They relocate them. And that, I believe, is just a shining example for the entire West to acknowledge that again, the species has a right and the individuals have a right to survive and thrive. And, you know, we can find ways to work with it. You know, in this town, we love our prairie dogs. Anyone who
the city council doesn't,
you know, sometimes the city council is less than supportive. The we'll miss Maricos. He did his, I think it was his master's thesis on prairie dogs.
Is that right?
Yeah,
but they took him out of all these public parks.
They did it, and you know, a lot of people believe a lot of funny things about prairie dogs, including that if you people that. They make holes that you step in and break your leg, which really doesn't happen. I mean, you just have to look where you're going.
What? Looking where you're going? Why?
Yeah, there's that. So as the spring approaches, and it may be approaching faster than we thought possible this spring, you know. And
my irises are coming up.
It's scary.
It's really scary.
I have to say I'm enjoying the weather, but when you're parked at the stoplight at St. Francis and Cerritos, just look around. The prairie dogs are on the southwest corner, and they're just awesome. And they're amazing to watch, and they have an incredibly high-functioning social system. They have language. There's a scientist in Flagstaff who has documented all that. They actually speak to each other. It's pretty remarkable.
They have, we've talked about that on this show. They have grammar, they have nouns, verbs, and adjectives.
That's correct.
It's crazy.
Yes, they can say.
They recognize people.
That's right. You're wearing a yellow shirt, he's wearing a red shirt. It's pretty incredible.
It's just about time to go, but there's some other things coming up that we want. We'll do another show on prairie dogs another time, but we do want to talk about other things that Wild Earth Guardians has coming up that people can participate in. For example, there is something called Stream Team, which is coming up in the spring.
That's right. So we're really excited. In the last 2 years, we've planted over 270,000 trees, restoring life to rivers and watersheds around New Mexico. And this year we're going to be looking forward to doing a Stream Team event behind the Valle Caldera on April 26th. So we'll be out there all day planting hundreds of trees and taking lots of pictures as well. So if you're interested in volunteering for an event like that, you can call our office or send us an email and we'll put you on the docket. But you could also check out our Facebook page and just see what it looks like, see what it looks like to put that many trees in the ground and how much work it takes. And over time, you know, that makes an incredibly significant difference.
And there are people who show up every year because it's just like, it's really fun.
It is really fun. People love it. And it's a very visceral experience. So, and we love our Stream Teamers. They give us their whole day. They work hard. They get dirty. They're dusty and tired at the end. They're probably a little cranky. And then you just look and there's hundreds of trees.
And there's barbecue.
Wild
Earth Guardians is on the web at wildearthguardians.org. The phone number is 505-988-9126. Carol Norton and Stephanie Sample are with Wild Earth Guardians. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.